Coco Taylor. Money's the Name of the Game off her album Old School. They don't call her the Queen of the Blues for nothing. She is absolutely fantastic. And money is the name of the game. And it's time to call in with your pledge, 603-430-9722. It is our fall pledge drive. And we really do need your support. So give us a call, 603-430-9722. You're listening to WSCALP Portsmouth Community Radio, 106.1 FM. My name is Sean Henderson. The name of the show is Stay Tuned. I'm here every single Friday from 1:30 to 5. I generally try to bring you live music whenever I can. Today is no different. Well, it is a little different, I'd say, because of my guest. My guest today is Jeff Daniels, acclaimed actor. A lot of people may not know that you're also a singer-songwriter. He is live with me in the studio, by the way. Maybe a lot of people don't know you're a singer-songwriter. I know that most people that I've told said, really? I didn't know.
They're stunned.
They're stunned, right.
Well, the reason is, and it's makes perfect sense, is that the expectations are so low when an actor picks up a guitar and instantly, suddenly is decided he's a rock and roll star. And it's the past is littered with those of us in the acting profession who have attempted.
Mm-hmm.
And William Shatner is one, of course.
William Shatner.
He did us no favors. Mm-hmm. Sebastian Cabot, if I remember correctly, has an album.
That is absolutely true. I forgot about that
Terry Bradshaw, the NFL analyst and Pittsburgh Steeler quarterback, made an album of country western songs. I think I even have an album by Telly Savalas during his Kojak years. So, you know, it's not, you know, for those of us who've been playing and are serious about it, we walk on stage or onto a show like yours with an 0-2 count on us.
Yeah.
It's not a good thing.
Well, I tell you what, I was one of those people that, well, let me just say, I just want to get this off my chest so we can get it out of the way. I think you're one of the finest actors out there, to be honest with you.
Oh, thank you.
Gettysburg is one of my favorite films of all time. I think that's it.
Wasn't that something?
It was a great movie. I thought you were phenomenal.
That whole little round top sequence and the whole bringing Chamberlain to life, the 20th Maine, the state of Maine, was a huge responsibility. It wasn't just a movie. It was like, I better not screw this up.
Mm-hmm. So you went into that film with a sense of, would you say more seriousness than your other roles?
You get the job and you then do the research. And I was one of those people who didn't know of him.
Uh-huh.
You know, he is one of the great unsung American heroes. And I think the movie, for whatever the movie did, helped at least bring him to light. Now, you know, you gotta understand, I did research on him. I got the job, and then, you know, like 3 or 4 months later, we were going to shoot it. So I'm reading the books. I'm reading all that, you know, John Pullen and Tom Desjardins mm-hmm. and all these guys. And I said, I got to go to Maine. I got to go up there to Bowdoin and to Brunswick and you know, go to the Historical Society.
Right.
Unfortunately, Dumb and Dumber had come out like a year before. So when I showed up in Maine with my little baseball cap and my Hawaiian shirt and my Dumb and Dumber on my resume, the Historical Society was a little concerned.
Mm-hmm.
and fortunately, it turned out all right. But yeah, they were a little concerned about who was going to be playing their hero.
Yeah, I bet. Well, it is such, I mean, you mentioned Dumb and Dumber, which is a movie that probably, allowed you to continue to do movies. It was just a huge success. But worlds apart from Gettysburg. There's Gettysburg, and then there's Dumb and Dumber. It's just,
and that was part of the plan, too, as an actor. You know, Kathleen, my wife and I, we had a two-year-old boy in mid-80s, and we didn't want to live in Hollywood. Didn't think we could afford L.A. I just didn't think the movies would last, you know, in the mid-80s. So we moved back to Michigan, which was home. And I figured that the only way I was going to sustain a career was by having as wide a range as possible as an actor. So that's why you see the career choices from a Gettysburg or a Dumb and Dumber to a Gettysburg to a Squid and the Whale. I mean, it really is, there's a method to that madness.
Well, there's, we just had our 10th annual film festival here in Portsmouth. And in one of the workshops, Dumb and Dumber was actually brought up. And you had mentioned what you brought to the character of Joshua Chamberlain and how serious you took it. likewise, with that character in Dumb and Dumber, you seem to bring a, even though it was completely sort of over the top dumb, but you seem to bring a lot of compassion and a lot of genuine emotion to that, you know, in a simplistic kind of way.
Very simplistic, yeah.
Was it just a lark kind of movie for you, or did you, you know, tell me about that character.
Well, I
didn't really necessarily want to talk too much about the movies. I mean, I appreciate you as an actor.
No, it's okay. But. You have to approach it the same way. Strange as it sounds, you know, oh, you're doing Dumb and Dumber. You're just out there doing shtick, and you're out, you know, flailing around being funny. And Jim was the same way. I mean, comedy is so hard. It's so difficult. And the reason you got to hit a smaller target. You've got to do everything that a dramatic actor does if you're going to do it well, meaning be real, be honest, be completely believable as this stupid human being who doesn't know he's stupid, who doesn't know he's dumb, who doesn't know he's funny. And then you've got to be funny.
Right.
There's that little thing of going, and if I land the joke here, it'll be funny. So the key to me, and it's strange what works for actors, but the key for me with the Dumb and Dumber character was I decided I needed to portray someone who had an IQ of 8. Not 7, not 9, 8. And when I got that specific, I got incredibly stupid and naive and innocent and just was led around by my nose, by Jim Carrey's character. Then it worked. Then I was okay.
Was it a fun experience to do?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was just such a lesson in comedy. I mean, we rarely cracked up. Rarely, if ever.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it was all about setup, joke.
Mm-hmm.
Setup, joke. If you're cracking up because Jim just did something off script that was really funny, you just blew a take where Jim was really funny.
Right.
So it really was, there was a great seriousness about it, strangely.
So how often did that happen where he would, because he seems like a wild and crazy guy. I'm not sure, I've never met him, but he seems like he could go off.
I think, you know, to be honest, 10% of the time.
Oh, really?
I think before every take it would be, oh, what if I did this? And then I could do that. And then Jim said, then I could do that. And great, let's roll it. And so we would execute that on take 4. On take 5, okay, this time I'll slam you in the back of the legs with the cane and then the cut. You know, it was planned right before we rolled so that we both knew not only what to do but how to react.
Interesting. Well, it's definitely an interesting subject for sure. And again, that was another great movie. I love Dumb and Dumber as well.
To some people, it's their Citizen Kane.
Yeah. I wouldn't quite go that far, but I do like it. Time right now is about 9 minutes past the hour. You're listening to WSCA. We're live in the studio with Jeff Daniels, and he's here to help us bring awareness to our pledge drive as well as his concert. We mentioned Joshua Chamberlain and how he visited Maine a little while ago. He's visiting Maine today as well. He's going up to Scarborough at the landing at Pine Point. He's performing up there tonight, and you can go on and check him out if you want to. But it is our pledge drive. We want you to call right now, 603-430-9722. And if you do, Jeff will sing a song. In fact, he's going to do that right now in anticipation that you'll call. So you have your guitar in hand.
Yep.
Let's play a song and see what happens.
I made a movie with Clint Eastwood called Bloodwork. And in the movie, Clint has a gun. And I'm the bad guy. 2 + 2 = pretty good chance I'm going to get shot and killed by Clint, which, for an actor, is a great honor.
I would imagine.
There's a room of actors who've been shot and killed by Clint Eastwood. It's a big room, but I'm in it. So I was very happy to do that. And after he shot and killed me, I went back to my trailer and wrote this. Thank you. Well, I've had more than my share of brushes with greatness, but with all humility, I would have to rate this. It's the biggest of the big, the best of them all. My dream came true with a little telephone call. The end of my line, No joking with the good, the bad, the ugly, the king of the unspoken. Make my day, blow me away, goddamn Dirty Harry Blues. He said, got this little project, got this little part about a serial killer with a cold heart. I said, Mr. Eastwood, I'd be so honored to play a bad guy. The only thing to make it better be if I, you know, got to die. He said, well, if I had to guess off the top of my head, when all's said and done, one of us is gonna be dead. Make my day, blow me away, goddamn Dirty Harry Blue. 30-30, 44, pull that trigger, Clint, give me what for. I'm a wanted man, dead or alive. I don't give a damn if it was 6 shots or 5. Well, he's been around forever, but he's still number one. Hell, there ain't nobody better at holding a gun. And I've thought about his movies, how you always learn your lesson. Steering down the barrel of Clint's Smith and Wesson. Now that golden door of opportunity has been flung wide open for little old me. Make my day, roll me away, goddamn Dirty Harry Blue. Well, the closer we got to my fateful day, well, the more he'd stare and the less he'd say. I thought, this is only a movie, right? Couldn't help but feel something about this was a little too real. When they put on my makeup for the very last time, even the makeup girl said, it's a good day to die. Make my day, blow me away, goddamn Dirty Harry Blues. 30-30, 44, pull that trigger, Clint, give me what for. I'm a wanted man, dead or alive. I don't give a damn if it was 6 shots or 5. Well, the sound man said we're rolling, props, gave him his gun. Someone yelled, action, take one. He slipped off his shades and he squinted those eyes. I tried to tell the truth, but all that came out were lies. I said my final line, Clint said his. Then he cocked back that hammer like he wasn't gonna miss. I wanted to cry like a baby, squeal like a pig. I was roasting like a marshmallow at the end of his twig. I was shaking like a leaf when his upper lip curled. When he pulled that trigger and I was leaving this world, I thought, wait a minute, to hell with the Oscar and the Academy. That little gold statue would be wasted on me, 'cause my dream came true out in Hollywood when I got killed by Clint Eastwood. Make my day, blow me away, goddamn Dirty Harry. Make my day, blow me away, goddamn Dirty Harry. Make my day, blow me away, goddamn Dirty Harry.
Jeff Daniels, live in the WSCA studios. Song called Dirty Harry Blues. Talking about getting shot by Clint Eastwood. Great song, too, by the way. Very funny.
Fun to do. There aren't many people who can sing that song.
That's true.
Well, maybe there are.
Well, he has a high body count, I suppose, but
yeah.
Let's hope those other people don't start a singer-songwriter career. We talked about that earlier, but I just wanted to talk about the music and how you got involved in that and how long you've been sort of a singer-songwriter.
I moved to New York in 1976 to chase the acting career, and I bought a guitar. Took it with me, wanted to learn it. I'd taken piano as a kid and had been in musicals and things. And I figured that I was going to be sitting in my one-room apartment waiting for the phone to ring for weeks and months at a time. And it is. There's nothing that can prepare a young actor for the level of rejection. That's what I tell college kids anyway. And it's true. But it kept me sane. You know, I would. It's a strange thing in this business is that you wait for the phone to ring for someone to tell you that it's okay, you can be creative now. And that can, for a creative person who is trying to live a creative life, an artist, if you will, that you're on someone else's clock. Mm-hmm. So that never made sense to me. And so to keep myself creatively sane, I just got good at the guitar. I would study it. I worked on it. I went to Stefan Grossman's tab books and you know, just did the whole mm-hmm. thing just for me.
Right.
And it became this great friend and this great kind of source of sanity in a very insane business.
Do you take it with you wherever you go? Is that something that's always with you, or whether you're on the movie set? Or?
Yeah, it became this wonderful thing that I take it to the trailer. Mm-hmm. You know, you do a big movie, you know, a big studio movie, and you get there at 6 in the morning, you walk through what it's going to be, and then they call you at 11. And you're sitting in that trailer for a lot of times, and you know, you can either do drugs or, you know, you can do something creatively productive. And I chose the latter. So that's it becomes this thing you do. And the songwriting was just, I think I was a writer before I knew I was a writer. I would just do it. Mm-hmm. And I was always attracted to the writers in the theater, at Circle Repertory Company, people, playwrights like Lanford Wilson. I was fascinated by the fact that he was working on a second act and he was holding it in his hand. This guy went on to win a Pulitzer Prize, mm-hmm. and it was like, I was interested in that. What is that? How do I do that? And so it was always this kind of thing I did privately. Mm-hmm. And then I pulled the, you know, when I had my theater company, the Purple Rose Theater Company in Michigan, we always need to raise money. So that became when I really kind of came out of the closet, so to speak, and in 2000, they pushed me on stage Christmas week and New Year's week just to raise money. And it was a train wreck. It was, you know, celebrity with a guitar and sweating like a large man from the Midwest. There was a serious fear factor going on. But I overcame that, and then it became a lot of fun. And for the last 7-8 years, I've been out on the road doing it.
So it surprises me that it was frightening to you. To be honest, I'm not sure why, but
I wasn't either, and I didn't expect it. And what I learned was that there was no character.
Oh, I see.
You do a play, you do a movie, you create this character, this other person, which in a way is kind of a filter between you and the audience mm-hmm. or camera, and it's also a safety net. You can go through it, you can get emotional, but you don't actually hurt yourself. Or you don't have to go through it yourself. It's always, oh, the character. And it's someone else's words. Mm-hmm. But when you walk out with a guitar and it's your stuff, and some of it's serious, where you got to roll out some of those things that meant something to you 12 years ago when you wrote it, and all of a sudden you're in front of people, and it's like opening up your chest and holding your, you know, throbbing heart in front of people going, ooh, I'm letting you in. That was frightening.
It's very interesting because I see that as an actor you would need to do that, but you're saying you separate it so much it's easily
you're naked.
Delineated.
Yeah. And with me, there's no band either. You know, then there's the guitar playing where it's like go to the solo, you know, and you can't look at anybody mm-hmm. who goes, don't worry, I got it.
Right.
And we've turned down your amp, so we know you're playing in the wrong key, but nobody knows. That thing.
Well, that's very interesting. Do you find yourself as an actor, as a character actor, when you go out on stage, is it always you, or do you ever try to create that sort of singer-songwriter? Are you always presenting yourself when you're performing?
What I came up with as a character was me, but me in a good mood. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad to be here. And I'm really excited to play for you tonight. And the fact that you paid money to see me means I'm going to make sure you have a good time. Mm-hmm. So that's the character I walk out with. And that's where the theater comes in. That's when you're doing Broadway, 8 shows a week, and you got the flu. We don't care. When 8 o'clock comes, you can't have the flu, and you've got to do whatever the character wants. So once I figured that this was the character, good mood, Jeff, enjoy, and mm-hmm. glad to be here, Jeff, which is usually the case. Right. Then it was okay.
How has it been received? I mean, as I said earlier, a lot of people don't necessarily know you're a singer or songwriter. You know, do you get a lot of just the curiosity seekers? Is that how people come to see you as a musician?
Yeah. Well,
I don't mean to make that sound dismissive of your music, but.
But it did sound dismissive. And that's okay. I feel suitably dismissed. And why not?
Why not? We're here.
But
we're
the
friends.
Thing is that yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I know exactly why, depending on where you play, a good number of them bought tickets. They just want to see the guy from Dumb and Dumber or Gettysburg or whatever. I just want to see you.
Right.
Unfortunately, these less than intelligent people realize that after 10 minutes of having seen me, they've seen me, past tense. So now it's like, oh, my God, he's actually going to play for another however many minutes. This could be really bad. So it's fun to see their faces about the second song go, oh, he's not, oh.
He's not so bad.
I guess I've, well, or, but that's about the third song. They go, oh, wait a minute, this might not be horrible. And then we're okay. After the first 15 minutes, they've gotten over it. And they realize it's not a ripoff, that I'm going to make them laugh harder than they have in a long time. And then drop in the serious ones. And then they walk out going, how do I get your CDs?
Right.
So I know it going in. It's the big elephant in the room.
You well,
know, that thing I've done before.
Yeah,
and I
right.
just put my arm around the elephant. And I mean, I deal with Dumb and Dumber right in the first song. I ask how many people are fans of Dumb and Dumber. And I don't know, many of them raise their hands. And I go, well, I know what that says about me, and I apologize for what it says about you.
Time right now is 2:22. We're live in the studio with Jeff Daniels. He's performing tonight up in Scarborough at the Landing at Pine Point. He's here to sort of help us bring awareness to what we're doing here at WSCA. It's our pledge drive, our fall pledge drive. It's time to call in with your pledges. If you like this sort of thing, this is the name of the show is Stay Tuned. I bring live musicians in here every single week if I can. If you like live music and you like hearing it on the radio, give us a call now, 603-430-9722. Jeff has a few CDs out, but he just gave me one, Jeff Daniels and Jonathan Hogan. These are signed CDs. It's autographed. The name of the album is called Together Again. Call in with a $50 pledge. I'll throw this CD in as well, and you'll get all the other good prizes. So give us a call right now, 603-430-9722. And right now, Jeff will do another song, maybe.
Here's a song about everyone has their first car. They remember their first car.
That's a good song.
What was yours?
Mine was a Malibu, and it never ran. I got it from my parents, and it was broken down. I had no idea how to fix a vehicle, so I sold it to one of my best friends for a couple $100, and he fixed that thing up like it was a muscle car after that, and I was so jealous.
What year was it?
Oh, let's see. That must have been 1981 when I was in high school. Yeah.
81 Malibu. What color?
Green with a white top.
Green with a white top. You're still proud of it.
Well, it was that car I never got to drive.
He held the rest of my life in the palm of his hand. We both got here sooner than both of us planned. We sat in a silence I swear I could hear a deafening roar that was hard on the ears. He told me a good boy always does what he's told. Chips off the block don't go breaking the mold. I said, yes, sir. He stared out beyond me through the eyes of a teen to his baby, his princess, the girl of his dreams. He said, without wheels, you won't get very far. You remember a man by the make of his car. He told me he loved her, and that mother understood. Treat her right, she'll treat you good. I was Valentino, I was Mario Andretti. I was K-Line in the corner, John Glenn waving through confetti. A legend before the fall, Bogart before Bacall. I was everything, oh, I ever thought I'd ever be. If God gave a gift to women, there'd be a ribbon around me.
I was gallant, I had talent when I was in my old man's blue Valiant. Well, I grind through her gears, I baby her clutch. Oh, I push her too hard. Oh, I ask her too much. She burns through my all, eats up my gas. She does 0 to 60 in 2 minutes flat. Her shocks are gone and her heat blows cold. She gets on the highway like she's growing old. But I was Valentino, I was Mario Andretti, I was K-Line in the corner jangling, waving through confetti. A legend before the fall, Bogart before Bacall. I was everything, oh, I ever thought I'd ever be. If God gave a gift to women, there'd be a ribbon around me. I was gallant, I had talent when I was in my old man's blue Valiant. There goes a jet black Cadillac. There goes a pink Ford Fairlane. There goes a creamy white Mercury Comet. They got the top down on that bright yellow Mustang. There goes a raked up Grand Prix and a pinstripe GTO. A Firebird, a Thunderbird, a Corvette Stingray. Oh my God, would you look at that? There goes an 81 green with a white top, broken down Malibu. But I'm in my old man. I'm in my old man's. I'm in my old. Blue Valiant. Well, I take a deep breath as her doorbell rings. When I see her, my brain cannot think of a thing. Well, I walk towards my old man's muscle machine with my baby, my princess, the girl of my dreams. I tell her, without wheels, we won't get very far. She takes a look at my big back seat and says, yes, you will. Eyes in my old man's. Eyes in my old man's. Eyes in my old man's. Blue Valiant. AM radio. Only got one station. Strangely, that station was WSC.
New strings.
Very good. Blue Valiant. That was Jeff Daniels live in the WSEA studios. Fantastic. Fantastic song, too. Thank you for doing that. That was one of the examples of, there's a few songs that, you know, you say you bring people in when they get to their, when they come to your show, you kind of, you make them laugh, and then you bring some of these more poignant songs on them. And I would imagine those are the songs that, correct me if I'm wrong, but those are the songs that are, that leave you more open, you know, leave you more bare or vulnerable maybe.
They used to. I mean, certainly when that was something that I realized in front of people singing them, that those more personal songs are a big emotional reveal. Mm-hmm. And not having a character to hide behind, it was, wasn't ready for that. I mean, right. There were songs early on, 10 years ago, when I started playing out, and I'd play them, and I had trouble getting through them.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know, where the hell is this coming from? And then, now, you can still tap into that, but it's like an actor. You ride it. You ride the emotional wave. You never complete the ride. You mm-hmm. never fall down. You never lose control, because it's a dirty little acting secret. If I sob, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
But if I almost lose it, you sob.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting.
It's really, you know, and I've tried it both ways in theater, where I've mm-hmm. just gone out there and just emotionally just turned it into a swamp with my mm-hmm. tears. And then the audience sits there going, well, we got to watch you go through something. We didn't, but right. we got to watch you.
I wonder if it's because then it becomes more... Has it become more empathetic towards you? So people, instead of looking
empathetic,
inwards...
But it's also the struggle, uh-huh. the human struggle to keep it together uh-huh. emotionally, and then they complete it.
Right.
If the material's there and the performance is there. But that was something I learned. And so with the songs as well. I mean, every time you do a song, it's not, you know, as you're doing it, it's not yours anymore. It's mm-hmm. theirs, and you want it to be theirs. There's got to be a connection. Whether it's comedic or whether it's emotional and serious, it doesn't matter. It has to be something the audience can relate to. And that's the goal of every artist, I think, certainly in the theater, and I think with songs. I'm a big fan of clarity, and I'm a big fan about singing about stuff that means something to you, but in
absolutely.
A way that you've never heard before.
And I have people in here all the time, and you know, I've talked to hundreds of artists, hundreds of musicians, and... my favorites are always those people that can really do that, put it out there in an honest way, you know, sort of emotionally bare, because there's no emotion that anyone's felt, for the most part, that no one else has felt, you know
right.
what I mean? There's no
we
new
are
emotion.
Human, after
exactly.
all.
Exactly. There's no new emotions out there, so when you can have a song like Blue Valiant, that's going to touch people in different ways, you know? It's the father-son relationship, it's the muscle car, it's that first taste of independence. All those can touch you in a different way, and I appreciate those songs. I appreciate the comedy songs, because they, you know, get you laughing, and it sort of takes you out of that. Do you find that it's easier to sort of get people into that to that space with the comedy? You know, you sort of open them with a laugh, and then they're open enough where they can go to it?
It's a lot like boxing, and it's just basic story structure, and it goes mm-hmm. back, whether it's a song or a play, or it doesn't matter. The comedy softens them up.
Right. All right, that's what I was
loosens them up, yeah. relaxes them. And then you drop in, you know, a more serious song right. that's and it hits them even harder. The emotional impact is greater
absolutely.
Than doing four emotional songs in a row. Now, right. you know, there are the people who were born without a sense of humor. So I can't help those people.
Right.
And they would rather hear four sad songs in a row. And But I've found that also with me, because of whether it's Dumb and Dumber or Purple Rose of Cairo, something wild, the comedic films I've done, people expect that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're paying to see, is you mm-hmm. be that likable guy that we liked in the movies. Don't be something else. Be that. And mm-hmm. so you give them that, and then add to that with the other stuff that you do with the guitar.
Well, you've been in so many different movies, and I know Dumb and Dumber is probably the most... financially successful one, maybe, but
for some, yeah,
yeah, yeah. but you're all over the place when it goes to acting. I mean, you've got some. You know, we talked about Gettysburg earlier, The Squid and the Whale. That's another one. I mean, that character is not necessarily a you know, feel good kind of.
Squid and the Whale was really. We shot that for like $30, and half the time we didn't have permits shooting in Brooklyn. It was mm-hmm. truly one of those independent. Shoot it and then pray for distribution and film festival, you know, miracles. We literally got to the end of it, shook hands, figuring no one would ever see it.
That must have been a huge boost to your, you know, to your self-esteem, maybe, to know that, because it was really well received. People loved that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a hard movie, but I mean, it's a great movie.
It was a great script, mm-hmm. and Noah Baumbach wrote and directed it, and it benefited from a singular vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a couple of producers on it, but they stood over there and made sure we had the money to shoot today. That's all they did. We didn't have 8 producers and 4 junior executives
mm-hmm.
all helping creatively
right.
because they went read one book about mm-hmm. how to write a screenplay. So we it was Noah's vision, and that allowed us to execute that.
Yeah.
And
well,
you know, it's all the blame, all the glory. Yeah. But in Noah's case, we were going down the right path, and it turned out to be a success.
Yeah, right on. Well, good for you for wanting to do that sort of thing, and I think you've done that throughout your career. But you know, sort of take those risks, because I don't know. I'm a laborer here in the Seacoast area, but. I would think that once you get to a certain level, and I see you at a certain level, I'm not sure, I could be delusional, but that taking those risks may not always be easy, and I'm not sure if that's correct.
It's not easy, but it's preferred.
Uh-huh.
In Hollywood, and this has been for decades, you can go back to Gable and Gary Cooper and all those guys, and there are guys who do it now. You create an image.
Right.
You create this persona, and you play to that every time. Don't age. Mm-hmm. Don't get older, but as long as you can sustain that image, then that's what they will hire mm-hmm. until it's of no use to them anymore. I've just found that, you know, again, creating the range, going from a Dumb and Dumber to a Gettysburg kept me interested
mm-hmm.
creatively. And then now it's you want a risk. I look for the risks where I can fail miserably. You know, I walk out with a guitar every night in front of another yeah. room full of strangers somewhere. You know, it's got failure written all over it. But that's exciting, working without a net
mm-hmm.
in my 4th decade of doing this.
Right.
That's whether it's films, plays, or music, that keeps me interested. Otherwise, you know, I'll go do something else.
Well, I'm very glad that you do what you do, for sure. It definitely feeds me and, you know, everything you do, really. I mean, I'm a big fan of your movies, as I said, and your music. So I encourage people to go see Jeff. He's performing tonight up in Scarborough at The Landing at Pine Point. Go to his website, jeffdaniels.com. And the website is pretty much geared towards your music.
Right? Jeffdaniels.com. It's all music. And we're starting to do a little bit of a blog thing, but I don't keep it up enough. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and all the money I might make from the CDs goes to my theater company, the Purple Rose Theater Company in Michigan. So you're doing a good thing.
Right. Well, I definitely want to talk about the Purple Rose when we come back. Time right now is 2:39. You're listening to WSEALP Portsmouth Community Radio. Jeff Daniels is here to help us sort of raise awareness, I guess, of what we're doing here. This is Community Radio, Portsmouth Community Radio. Community is our middle name. And community is a valuable thing. If you want to see community radio continue, now's the time to call 603-430-9722. Give us a call. I'll give you an autographed copy of Jeff Daniels and Jonathan Hogan's CD, Together Again. Call in with a $50 pledge or more. We'll give you that, as well as a bunch of other gifts that they have out at the front table. Looks like some pledges are already rolling in. What do we got here? Charlie and Jeannie Daniels just called in, and they got
their, relatives.
There you go. They got their first signed CD. So thank you, guys. Charlie Daniels just called in. Say, oh, that's good.
Play Orange Blossom Special.
Okay, well, let's go to another song, and then we come back. I definitely want to talk about the Purple Rose, because I think it's brilliant what you've created out there in Michigan, and such a valuable asset, really. So, what do you want to do now?
Well, I'll do one. I have kids
okay.
who drive, and they're in their 20s, and they're in their college age now. This is another one of those songs that's kind of universal. My daughter and Kathleen, they have a mother-daughter relationship that is common in that they will go shopping together and then come back not speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came time for someone to drive with my daughter when she got her learner's permit, where you ride shotgun while they're trying to figure out how fast to go on the interstate. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it makes no sense to me, but that was the assignment. Kathleen said, there's no way I'm doing it. So I got the assignment. Subsequently, my daughter at the same time was going through that period in her life where she's entitled to everything right now. Mm-hmm. So she said to me, she said, Dad, you know, you should write me a song. I said, okay, but you're not going to like it. She starts the car when it's already running. Inside the garage, she's got that engine gunning. She's got ice in her veins, lead in her shoe, brand new permit, something to prove. Me and daddy, daughter going out for a ride. Good God in heaven, please bring me back alive. Well, she rams it into gear like she's going for the kill. She backs it out so quick, she gives my goosebumps chills. Slams on the brakes, nick of time, bringing new meaning to stopping on a dime. Mean dad or daughter going out for a ride. Good God in heaven, but bring me back alive. I'm looking out behind me, to my right and to my left. Oh, my little baby girl, she scared me half to death. Me and dad and daughter going out for a ride. Good God in heaven, please bring. Well, she merges on the highway like she's shot out of a gun. Changes lanes faster than a Formula One. Well, tell my little baby girl, listen, why do you have to drive so fast? She flips her hair behind her and steps on the gas. Me and dad and daughter going out for a ride. Good God in heaven, please bring me back alive. I'm looking out behind me, to my right and to my left. Oh, my little baby girl scared me half to death. Me and daddy's daughter going out for a ride. Good God in heaven, please bring me back alive. Every corner like an afterthought. I like that line. I took the day off after I wrote that line. If memory serves, that line in particular really ticked her off. She takes each and every corner like an afterthought. She flies by cop cars like she'll never get caught. But tell my little baby girl, listen, I don't mean to be rude, but where in the hell did you learn how to drive like you do? She smiles her pearly white, slips her hands to 10 and 2, and says, Daddy's little daughter drives just like you. I'm looking out behind me, to my right and to my left. Oh, my little baby girl, she scared me half to death. Me and daddy daughter going out for a ride.
Very nice. I imagine that's quite an experience.
The first time I did that song in front of I had 1,500 people in a big, old, huge opera house. My daughter didn't even know I'd written it.
Oh. And, you surprised her with it?
Oh, did I surprise her? And she was in the crowd, and my son was one of my roadies.
Oh, that's funny.
And I usually do the show sitting down, so he brought out another chair right to my left, would be the driver's seat. Also brought out a steering wheel from a junkyard that we'd gotten, and we called her up on stage in front of 1,500 people, which felt like 15,000. And she, bless her heart, got up there and sat in the chair, leaned into me, I hate you, and then we went ahead and did the song. Place went nuts. And now every time I do it, she insists on, you're gonna call me up, right? Yes, 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 sweetie, yes.
She any better of a driver?
She's pretty good, actually. Yeah, she's better than me.
Let's just, I know I do want to talk about the Purple Rose, but I want to ask you a little bit about your family, because I think it's atypical of someone in the acting profession to sort of move back to their hometown that isn't Hollywood, you know?
No,
not that Hollywood is anyone's hometown, actually, but... and I'm wondering how that works, because I know you moved back to Michigan. Do you still live in Michigan?
Yeah.
Yeah. You moved back to Michigan so you could raise a family, and that doesn't seem like it would be easy being in the acting profession, doing what you do.
No, and at the time, 1986 I did it, after being in New York for 10 years. At the time, I mean, while there may have been others, you could almost count them on one hand. Redford was in Utah. Harrison Ford maybe was in Wyoming, I think. Tommy Lee Jones was in Texas. Sissy Spacek was in Virginia. And that was about it. Everybody else pretty much had to stay in L.A. or New York. And I didn't... We had the kid, and we were going to have more, and I didn't know how to raise a family in L.A. And I was just brought up in New York as an actor, so I was also in New York kind of, you know, based. But we didn't think we could afford New York, so I thought the career would end. I really did. I was very fatalistic about it. And when it does, well, we may as well be home. And for Kathleen and myself, Michigan was home. So that was the reason. And all the agents said was, look, you can live wherever you want, but don't ever tell us that when we have an audition for you that you're not going to make it. We're treating you like you're 30 minutes away in L.A. or New York. So you pay for the plane. You get out there and you make it like you're going from the valley in L.A. And fortunately, I was at a point at that point where they were offering me more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, I'd have to go out and audition for 2 weeks for about five or six movies. Dumb and Dumber was one of those things where I went out on a two-week stint. But not too often. And so it worked out all right. And then the L.A. riots happened. The earthquakes happened. Mm-hmm. Then the riots happened. And then people were leaving.
Right.
And now it's, you literally can be anywhere because the movie industry it's not based in Hollywood anymore. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately for those folks, it's everywhere. First it was Canada, now it's in any state with a tax incentive.
That's very interesting. Well, I know that, as I mentioned, we just had our film festival here, the Portsmouth Film Festival, New Hampshire Film Festival. And there was a panel, and there was a bunch of L.A. guys up there. And they were saying that you could do it anywhere, but if you're going to make it, you really got to be in Hollywood. And I'm not sure if that's true, but...
I'm proof that it isn't.
Right. I mean, but you got to... I mean, you're fortunate enough to be able to hop on a plane whenever you could get that to Hollywood. What advice would you give?
Yeah, I mean, the young actor has to go to L.A. or New York.
Yeah,
if
okay,
he or
so.
She has national dreams and having a lifelong career in it, yeah, you got to go move to New York. I was there 10 years. I was in New York 10 years. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you got to make that commitment and do that. And, yep.
Now, you have a song called Mother's Oldest Son. Is that the name of it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you talk about that. You talk about your early career. And which is another great sort of poignant song, and you talk about how your parents supported you and sent you out there, but you really did at some point were like, I'm coming back, this isn't working, and it was really at your mother's sort of pushing.
Yeah, my mother is very strong and loving, but strong, and the parents were both very supportive. And when I got this opportunity to go to New York City at the end of my junior year at college, I'd gotten in this college festival, and one of the directors was from New York, and he said, you know what you should do with your life, don't you? You should quit college and come to New York, be an apprentice at my off-Broadway theater company, which was highly reputable and one of the great ones at the time, Circle Repertory Company. You should do that, and you should do it now. But I'm not going to tell you what to do. So go home and talk to your family. And you know. So I went to my parents, and I laid that out, and my dad looked at my mom, and then he looked at me and said, you should go, which... There was no, what about your education? What about a backup plan? What about... They had seen me on stage, and even though I didn't know why I was good or what I was doing, I was good, and I knew what to do in front of an audience in whatever musical or play I was doing. So they could tell that this had to be chased. So they said, you should go. But 2 years into it, it's New York City, small town boy, Midwest. It's too much.
Yeah.
It's too much. And I called her and I said, I don't want to do this. I'm done. And she very quietly said, find a way to stay.
Which is a such, I mean, you talk about when you open people up, that line right there, for some reason, I don't know what it is about that line, but having a mother say to you, find a way to stay.
That's all she didn't berate me. She didn't lecture. That's all she said. And probably hung up soon after that. And I said, okay, I'm going to give it 5 years. And after, you know, it's like, come on, just stay there. It's hard. And that's, you know, I look at kids now, young actors now, and I try to impress upon them, the college kids, I said, put your cell phones down. Your career isn't going to happen as fast as you might Google something.
Right.
It could take 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kid is rare now.
The kid that is willing to make that investment of 10 years.
Or you get there and you're 21, 22, and someone, like in my case, Richard Dreyfuss, who was well-established. I mean, Richard was just doing great work already, and I met him in a bar, and he said, you're an actor. I said, yeah, and we talked a little bit. He goes, it doesn't mean nothing till you're 30. So hang on to your 30.
Mm-hmm.
That was his advice.
And how did that land on you?
It's a long haul.
But did you take it as, some young people would say, he doesn't know, I'm different. A lot of people think that. It happens the same in the music biz, you know. Or did you say he's a more, you know, a mentor type thing, so I'm going to take it.
He's just been doing it longer. Mm-hmm. And I always respected that, whether I was brought up that way to do so, or I just always respected those who had success and had been doing it longer and were willing to give me a piece of advice, because I was in this for the long haul, I hoped. And I think also I was fortunate in that the theater company I went to had people like Lanford Wilson and Marshall W. Mason, who were revered in the 70s in the American theater scene. But also film. I didn't get out with some, you know, Dumb and Dumber wasn't my first film.
Right.
It might have been a whole different deal if it had been. I got out with, I was in, you know, I was playing for the Red Sox or whatever. I jumped all the minor leagues, and I'm in Terms of Endearment with Jack, Deborah, and Shirley.
Mm.
And then I'm working with Woody Allen. And then I'm working with Mike Nichols. You don't strut onto a set and start telling Mike Nichols how great you are.
Right.
You just don't. And Meryl. So I kept my mouth shut and my ears open, that thing. And I learned a lot, and I'm glad I did.
Absolutely. We're glad you did as well. We're live in the studio with Jeff Daniels. Time right now is about 8 minutes before the hour. This has gone a little bit longer than I had told you it would, but it's been a great conversation so far. Jeff is here to help bring awareness to our pledge drive. It is our pledge drive, our annual fall pledge drive. It's a time where we ask you to call in and support us for what we do. If you like this type of programming, this is the time to call, 603-430-9722. We appreciate Jeff being here. He knows exactly what it's like to sort of raise money for a nonprofit, a struggling nonprofit. So we really appreciate his support here, and we really need your support. If you would like to call now, 603-430-9722. Show us your support for Community Radio. We are Portsmouth Community Radio. Community is our middle name, so give us a call and support us. We'll give you a copy of his CD with Jonathan Hogan. The name of the album is called Together Again. It is autographed. And we'll be handing those out to anyone that calls with a pledge. So give us a call right now, 603-430-9722. You mentioned the Circle rep, and I won't keep you here that much longer, but I do want to talk about the Purple Rose, which I've said every break that I want to talk about, and I haven't so far. But you mentioned the Circle rep, and you created this theater out in Michigan called the Purple Rose. And basically, did you model it after that experience? And just tell me about the experience, because it's, again, you know, someone going to Michigan to raise a family while they're an actor seems, you know, beyond the norm.
Mm-hmm.
Creating a theater company in Michigan seems probably even more out of the norm.
Yeah, a double whammy.
And a successful theater company. It sounds like it's a very successful theater company, which, in a certain way, is, again, almost polar opposite than what people would expect, because the theater company in itself, the arts has brought sort of financial gain to the community. It sounds like it's really helped the community what you've done out there. So I've kind of laid it all out. I was just wondering if you can talk about it. I just want the people at home to. I want to stress the importance of the arts and stress the importance of places like WSCA. And the Purple Rose, and just, you know, arts in general, and how vital it is for a community, And so I want people to realize that, you know.
Well, when the arts are done well, there's nothing like them. And that's, well, theater. When the theater arts are done well, there's nothing like them. When they're done badly, like a lot of things, it's people should stay away in droves. And I wanted to do a theater company in Michigan. You know, when I moved the family back there in 86, creatively I went to sleep. There were no real professional theaters running in the way I wanted to run. Circle Rep, all they did were new American plays. Every show was brand new from the blank page to the stage. That's all we did in New York. And so that's what I wanted to create. So I bought a building, an old wooden warehouse in the middle of my little two-stoplight, 5,000-person town, Chelsea, Michigan, 15 miles from Ann Arbor, where there were more rooftops, as they say. Right. But and I wanted to create a professional home for people, young and old, like me, who were pros, but didn't get the breaks I did, who either went to New York and it didn't work, or never went and had a kid or had two kids, and just they're talented, but you know, the drive, the ambition, the throwing that whole life away to chase an acting career that may or may not work, they didn't do it. So I wanted to create a home for them. And over the years, we have been a home for the new American play. And there are many theaters around the country that are. And we have learned over the years that comedy is a great way to sell tickets. It's hard to do. It's harder to do well. As I've said, the last time I looked, the Greeks were holding up two masks. Mm-hmm. So I take issue with those who think, yes, but it's a lesser art form. And you can look all the way to the Oscars for that. You know, best actor and best picture rarely, if ever, goes to a comedy. Right. And yet every year we've got a comedian running the show. So
yeah, that's a good point.
I've always equated, you know, tragedy and comedy as the same, mm-hmm. equal partners. And so that's what we did. We led with comedy. And I also told I gathered writers who had never written a play, who had, you know, written sitcoms and short stories. I said, stop, write 120 pages of a play. We will teach you how to do that. And that took time. That took to really get maybe 6 to 8 playwrights writing play after play about our corner of the country. Took about 15 years to really get them. The actors were there. Mm-hmm. The directors we developed. The designers were pretty much there. But it was the playwrights. And that's what Circle Rep was driven by, were the playwrights. Mm-hmm. So now we've got that. And I tell them, much like songwriting, I said, hold a mirror up to the people sitting in the seats. Write about them. I know art is personal and, you know, gaze into your navel and express this thing, and hopefully someone will see this incredible journey I've been on. I get that part of it, and that's fine. But in the theater, if you do that, you're going to play to an audience of one. Mm-hmm. Unless what you're looking at is something that's universal, something that taps into them, is a point of view, takes a subject that they're all very familiar with and spins it in a way that they've never thought about before and sends them out into the street, into their cars, talking about it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've had success doing, is holding a mirror up to our folks, our audience, and writing about them through comedy and through drama.
Well, I think it's a gift. I mean, I really do think it's a gift for any community, really. So I want to take my hat off to you for doing that.
And it's done. I mean, two stoplights, 5,000 people in the town. We drag 40,000 people a year through that town.
It's just phenomenal, really. I mean,
restaurants, mm-hmm. hotels, B&Bs, coffee shops, even a cowboy boot shop in the middle of Michigan. What's he doing there? Selling cowboy boots till 8 o'clock at night when the curtain goes up. The business folks, and those are the guys who said, Jeff, you're an idiot. Mm-hmm. Don't do this. No one's going to come to see any theater. And I said, well, first of all, it's theater. Second, watch me. And now...
Did you have any doubts about it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I didn't know. We're 20 years old this season. Mm-hmm. And it's always a crapshoot. We were at an advantage. We had, you know, a movie boy. Movie boy was running the show. So some people would just come out to see what I'm doing and to see if I was in the lobby. But eventually it became, they came to see the show. They came to see the Purple Rose Theater Company. And that's where we are now.
That's fantastic. If you want to learn more about the Purple Rose, you can go to their website, purplerosetheater.org, or jeffdaniels.com if you want to learn more about Jeff as well. And you can He has a CD out called Live at the Purple Rose Theater, which is an excellent CD, a live CD. I encourage you to pick that up. Jeff is performing tonight up in Scarborough at the